We got coronavirus in BC.
Oh, what? Yeah. Are you serious? Okay, well, can you drive me home? I'm not taking the SkyTrain. Yeah. Wait, what? Seriously, where? Oh, f*** me. I knew this
New
was
New Westminster on the corner of...
Shut up, Brian. Don't even joke about that. That's not on my news feed. Now I'm stressed.
Oh, don't be stressed.
I was feeling positive, but now I'm going to die of the coronavirus. BC reports first coronavirus in Vancouver region. God damn it. Yeah, we're screwed. We are screwed. I knew this.
Settle down, Ron.
No, it's so true. Settle down. I knew once it hits BC, man, we're done.
This is the AT Banter Podcast, a balanced and entertaining look at assistive technology, accessibility, and its importance in people's lives. Join Rob Minot, Ryan Fleury, and Steve Barclay as they banter with people around the world about anything and everything regarding assistive technology and the disability community. Now, on with the show.
Hey, and welcome to another episode of AT Banter.
Banter, banter.
Ooh, that was a strike.
Damn, you're serious.
Yeah, I turned that thing 90 degrees there.
Yeah, you knocked the cowbell right off the stand, dude. Holy cow.
Knocked the cowbell right off the cow.
Yeah.
My name is Rob Minot. Joining me today, Mr. Ryan Fleury.
Howdy.
As usual. Mr. Steve Barclay.
With enthusiasm.
Wow.
The cowbell.
I'm being gentle now.
And hey, look, I see somebody else is mic'd here.
He is too.
Mr. Dumbly.
Thanks for joining us, Grumbly.
Yeah.
Press him one more time. What? A second, because he does different things.
So far, he's indistinguishable from Ryan.
This is pretty,
pretty much. Every time I get off the phone.
Hey, Ryan, how about that lift? Oh my God. I have to edit that. Look at that waveform. It's just like.
We should. Oh, let's play a game, Ryan or Grumbly.
Good Lord. Well, listen, I was going to start off by saying that you guys did it.
Yeah, okay. No, Grumbly's going to sleep.
He's going to sleep. All right, hold on. We just got to wait for this. You're right. This is exactly what it's like with Ryan, too. It's like, wait, he's going to sleep. Okay, good. Okay. No, I was going to say you guys did a fine job last week without me.
All Steve. Thank you, Steve.
Oh, yeah.
Bailed us out.
Just don't do it again.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Well, believe me, I will do my best. As long as I don't get the coronavirus, we should be okay.
Holy smokes, yeah. I'm keeping lime around house just in case.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I'm hoping, actually, I'm kind of, global pandemic doesn't really panic me as much as, like, I don't know, some other, like an asteroid hitting the earth or anything, because I feel like, because I'm a hermit anyways, I'm a homebody, I have social anxiety, I like staying at home anyway, so I feel like a global pandemic, out of all the apocalyptic scenarios that we could go through, I feel like I have a best shot at a global pandemic of surviving.
Yeah, seems reasonable.
Yeah.
As long as you don't touch a railing in that time.
You know? Yeah, exactly, yeah, which I don't anyways, yeah. You know, and, you know, as long as I just have coffee and creamer.
Yeah, that's all you need.
That's all kind of I need.
Make your one run out to Safeway to grab the bulk pack of Chef Boyardee.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a flat of that in the cupboard anyway, so, you know, I'm kind of good. So bring it on. Bring on the coronavirus.
Or the other corona would be good too. You can bring that on.
Just don't, like, not the simian flu though. Nothing that makes animals super intelligent who then take over the planet, because then that's a problem. So.
Yeah.
Anyways, I don't know how we got off topic on that.
Well, no, it's not off topic. It's current. That's current events, man.
That's true.
Yeah. Coronavirus. It's like 150 people dead in China right now for, because of it already.
Yes.
Is it that high now?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. And then we've had, what, two confirmed cases in Toronto?
Yeah, husband and a wife.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, well, listen. Maybe a global pandemic will bring the rent down in the city.
Not likely.
No, you don't think so? It'll actually go up?
Oh, well, probably.
Yeah, they'll start having to put in HEPA filters on the furnaces, and they'll raise the rents as a result.
You know, I considered actually getting some of those face masks, but then when I had to order them on Amazon, I realized they're actually made in China, so that seemed a bit to be counterproductive.
And licked by the workers.
Yeah, so it's not going to happen. I don't know how effective those are anyways. Do they really do anything? I see people walking around with those all the time.
They're, you know, if somebody has something and they sneeze into them, it might do something, but I don't think it's really going to do a whole lot, you know, because it's not like they seal around your face, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they keep you from outputting crap, I guess, but you're still going to breathe in crap.
Oh, yeah. See, I guess I always thought it was the other way around. I thought people were wearing them to protect themselves, but maybe they're wearing them because they're sick, which in which case, okay, good for you.
Yeah, and a lot of these things, too, they're transmittable through mucous membranes, so, you know, that mask ain't over your eyes.
True. Oh.
Hmm. Yeah, so you touch a railing, rub your eyes, infected.
Yep. Yeah. That's it. Yep. And you're dead. That's it. You're dead.
Well, good night. That's cheery.
All right. Well, let's rant a little bit more. Tell us about your Uber Lyft rant.
Okay. So we just got Uber and Lyft in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And you know, Ryan in particular has been a pretty big booster of Uber and Lyft because F-bomb taxis.
You know. Well, did you hear, and I'm just going to interject here, on the news the other night.
Yeah.
Was it the news? Yes, I think it was the news. Anyway, one of the reporters took an Uber from some area in Mount Pleasant to Metrotown, and it cost him, what was it? I think it was $18.
Mm-hmm.
They took the same trip in a cab.
Yeah.
It was $36.
Yeah.
It's like, bring on Uber. These taxi companies can screw themselves.
Yeah. Okay. So I get that.
Yeah.
However, the provincial government who licenses these guys, in their infinite brilliance, did not make it a requirement for Uber or Lyft to have any wheelchair accessible services.
Yes. Yeah.
So today, the Vancouver Taxi Association, actually I believe it was yesterday, the Vancouver Taxi Association announced that because Uber and Lyft don't have to do it, they're no longer going to subsidize wheelchair accessible cabs.
I heard
cabs.
That on the news, yeah.
Oh, wait, what?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, I'm stunned. That's...
It's a douche move.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely. I mean, it's totally a douche move. I mean, we hated these guys already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they're jackasses. But on top of it now, they're jackasses who are going after the most disadvantaged clients that they have.
Wow. That is, that's a scumbag move.
Yep, absolutely.
Holy cow. I did not hear that.
Yeah, it was
Why
on the news.
Why isn't that getting big news?
It was on the news last night.
Was it?
They talked about on CTV anyway. Yeah, a little bit.
I really hope every one of those single cab companies go under because of...
That's such a mafia mentality.
Yeah. Well, really, here's the thing. If they go under, who has wheelchair accessible services?
Yeah.
Nobody. Because they didn't require it of Uber and Lyft. At very least, they should have required that Uber and Lyft pay into some kind of fund for more accessible taxi type services. But all it takes is for the government to clamp down on them and say, hey, you have to do this.
Yes. You know? Which they could have. We've been waiting for 2 years to get ride sharing here.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
You know, they said they were delaying this because they wanted to do it right and they wanted to have proper licensing. So they forced them to get class 4 licenses, which, you know, most other places don't force them to do. Bravo for them for that. But come on. Accessibility is important. There's a whole group of people who can't use this service now.
It goes beyond that. I mean, it's accessibility and mobility combined. I mean, those are core components of what we need.
Yeah.
This isn't like a throwaway issue. This is a major
And I'm surprised
major accessibility problem.
Yeah.
Surprised that we haven't heard these groups screaming yet because I'm sure there were talks with the premier and some of the disabled groups about bringing ride sharing in. You know, so I'm sure we're going to hear about this.
Yep, you betcha.
Ugh, that's terrible.
Well, you want to know what else is really terrible? Did you hear what Surrey's doing?
Yes.
Surrey is pulling shitty moves as well.
What are they doing?
The mayor of Surrey is basically entrapping Uber drivers and fining them because they don't have a business license to operate in Surrey.
What stick is up everybody's asses about this? Yeah.
They have somebody call Uber. Uber shows up, and then a bylaw officer comes and tickets them.
Why?
Because they don't have a business license.
But I know, I understand
Surrey.
That. But yeah. Why? So, but why? Why is Surrey against having?
Surrey's not. The mayor is.
Man, that's crazy.
On the news last night, they launched the Uber app, and within a minute of opening the app, they had 4 requests for an Uber. You know, the demand is there. Yeah, it's the mayor who also wants to dissolve the RCMP and bring in his own.
What?
Yeah, he wants to dissolve the RCMP and bring in his own city police.
Nuts.
He's an idiot.
Oh my God.
I would love to know who financed his political campaign. Yeah. Because I'm willing to bet.
Taxi company?
There are taxi companies behind him.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
I just think he's a twat. Sorry, but he's just going to cost that city money.
I don't know if I'm going to have to bleep that or not.
Probably.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Where do we stand on that?
Wait, do we bleep?
I bleep. Oh, yeah. I bleep occasionally. I mean, I don't bleep.
F-bombs will bleep.
Yeah, usually. Usually any F-bombs I'll Oh, God, I don't even know where to go from that. Okay, so what were we talking about?
I think we're talking news.
Oh, yeah, I know. We're talking about Uber and Lyft. But
right.
Because I'm still trying to process this news. Like, I can't believe that. So as it stands right now, if you have a wheelchair in the city and you call for either a cab or an Uber or Lyft, there's no guarantee that you're actually going to be able to.
No, if you call for an Uber or Lyft, they will not send an accessible vehicle because they don't have any.
Okay.
If you call for a taxi, you can request a wheelchair accessible taxi.
Okay.
And they do have wheelchair accessible taxis.
Okay.
However, the Taxi Association has now said that they are no longer going to subsidize the wheelchair accessible taxis, which means there won't be more wheelchair accessible taxis put on the road. So the ones that we have now are the ones that we have. We won't be getting any more. As those ones start to age out and die, there won't be any more to replace them. That's basically what they're saying.
Yeah. Okay. Well, somebody needs to go in and fix that. Hopefully that's, you know, and the fact that, I mean, at least it's getting, seems to be getting some news coverage because that's ridiculous. You can't do that. We just can't do that. Like, we can't live in a society where there's no...
No, whether you're Uber, Lyft, or a taxi company, or other, you know, some sort of public access transportation organization, I think you need to have a percentage of your fleet that's accessible. You know,
absolutely.
It needs to be mandated.
I mean, for sure. I mean, we're going to be talking about different articles today about accessibility and things. And I can't believe that we're going backwards on some of the most important aspects of accessibility.
Yep.
It's insane.
Well, and especially, you know, during the last little snowstorm that we had, you know, Handy Dart was only, what do they call it, priority service, or I forget the terminology, but it wasn't, you know, if you had to go to the mall or go grocery shopping, they weren't going to pick you up. It was for, you know, medical appointments only.
Yeah.
So, you know, limited service and we have no way to get around, right? So,
that's disgusting.
Yep. And it's a problem.
Yeah, it really is. I just, this city, man. What the hell is wrong with this city?
Well, the province. another one, and just transit related.
Yeah.
City of Kitimat is now having to cut back on their bus services because the liquid natural gas company that is operating in the north has recruited recruiting the bus drivers away. They need drivers for the liquid natural gas stuff. So they're now poaching the
bus drivers,
and there aren't enough bus drivers to run the routes in Kitimat anymore.
Jeez. Well, you know what, bring on the apes. You know, maybe we should just get the simian flu out there.
Yeah. You can't do any worse.
That's right.
Yeah. And that, of course, makes people go.
It's never going to get old for us.
Nope.
It'll get old for the audience. Not for us, though. We're going to be. Hey, Ryan.
Rob.
Speaking of rambling on, what are we doing today? Not you, Grumbly.
No, sorry. Today we are talking news. We've got four or five different stories. I don't know if we're going to cover all of them, but we'll have a discussion on a few topics of accessibility. I agree.
Yeah, shut up.
I don't know. Grumbly's inserting editorial comment.
Yeah, really. A little harsh.
Jeez.
A little harsh. Remember who pays you? Cuts your check there, buddy. You want more batteries? Better shape
up. Smart enough.
Did you order a t-shirt, Ryan, from
I did.
Yeah, I was kind of bummed out that I missed last week.
TwoBlindBrothers.com.
Yeah, that was a really good interview. These seemed like really fun guys.
Yeah, I'm concerned, though, it's not going to fit. I think the U.S. sizes are smaller than our Canadian sizes.
Are you kidding?
No.
Are they bigger?
No,
it's far from it, dude.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they have to service the state of Texas. So.
And everything's bigger in Texas.
All right. Well, we'll see when it comes.
Trust me. It's a large there is going to... Would you order a large or an extra large?
Extra large. All my shirts are extra large.
Good Lord. Yeah, you'll definitely fit. Yeah,
excellent. Yep. Okay. I ordered one, too.
Yeah.
Oh, did you?
Yep.
So what are the t-shirts worth?
$80.
Oof.
Canadian.
Oof.
Yeah, thereabouts.
Yeah, it was like, I think, $63 with the exchange and taxes.
Like $80. Softest shirt in the world.
So they say.
Clearly.
That's what they're telling us.
Yeah.
Well, it's that bamboo, right? Bamboo is a really unique material.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's bamboo. What was it? Bamboo, cotton, and...
Probably
the spandex material, yeah.
Yeah, Lycra. Yeah, so it sounds cool. Yeah, so I was a little sorry to miss that, but you guys did okay. You managed without me.
Well, don't make a habit of it.
All right, well, let's start out. Let's talk a little bit about web accessibility, shall we?
Absolutely.
Because while we're on the topic of accessibility, I thought this was interesting. I saw this article, but did you guys realize that January 2021... is the deadline for Ontario for the Accessibility Act over in Ontario to implement full web accessibility?
Now, is that just government, or is that government and private enterprise?
It was both.
Yeah, it's both.
Organizations of 50 employees or more, plus government agencies as well.
Yep. Yeah, which
ain't gonna happen.
Of course, it's not gonna happen. I mean. And herein lies the problem. There's many problems. I mean, there's been problems with that that Ontario Accessibility Act right from the get-go. They're not really on track to meet a lot of the goals that they've set. I mean, obviously, I'm all about accessibility. My problem is, are they overreaching with this? Because I feel like we don't even have accessibility in like build environments, or we just had a conversation about how we've gone backwards in terms of accessible cabs. I think that this legislation is all well and good, but I think that there also has to be tempered with a realistic expectation, and that's where I feel like it's falling down. And I think that this is the problem that's happening in the States specifically with a lot of the lawsuits around the ADA wording. That Domino's decision just recently last year is a great example of where that yardstick is in terms of what you can point to and what you can actually litigate. So, you know, and in that example, it was pointing to it was either their website or their app or whatever.
Yeah, their website and their app.
And just the fact that, you know, it was not usable to somebody who was trying to access that with a screen reader.
Right.
I mean, that was a very specific problem. Those are the types of things that are going to be able to be litigated and to be enforced.
Yep.
Something like you don't have strong enough contrasting colors in your graphical header or your website colors, that's just not something that's ever going to be able to be enforced. And it's never going to be something
it's probably not anything that you're going to see a lawsuit around anyways.
Well, no, exactly. But that's what I mean.
That's probably not even part of WCAG compliance.
It is. Well, I mean, I don't know it's about the compliance
part. It might be part of a recommendation.
Right. So,
but they have recommendations and then they have.
I see. Okay.
You know, then they have actual hard compliance items.
Right. See, that's what I think they need to make more clear. Or at least I would hope so. And again, you know, maybe we might see a real uptick in companies that make it their specialty to go in and help businesses.
Already happening. There's tons of them. You could Google right now. There's a ton of them in the States because of ADA, and they're starting to pop up in Ontario like crazy too.
And that transitions well into the next thing I wanted to talk about, which was this this new startup called Accessibee, that is trying to do that. Although with an AI component, it would just be software that you would just run.
Yeah, virtually all of the guys who are doing compliance now are using some sort of AI component. So it's talking about how they are using Iris and OCR technologies to understand what objects and images are and create alt text. We know how well that works.
Yeah, well, that still has a long way to go as well.
Yeah, that's not even going to provide a minimal amount of compliance, I would think.
Well, no, or even really very good alt tags at all, you know, because again, it can identify certain objects in a picture, but it can't, without context, that's all useless anyways.
Yeah, and we know how well OCR works on colored backgrounds and with funky fonts, right?
I think this is great. I think if it works, and that's great, and if it makes it easier for websites to be more compliant and more usable, I also think that's good. What worries me is this AI component and whether or not that is a better way to make websites accessible as opposed to actually going in and doing it manually and doing it the right way.
Well, so this is different than what guys like Vispero are doing, because what Vispero is doing is they're going to give you a report of what you need to fix.
Right.
And give you examples of how to fix it.
Right.
So those tools exist. If you want to fix your website and make it accessible, the tools are there to tell you what you need to do.
Right. Yeah, and I think that is still the best way, cuz I worry about if it's, you know, are we just going to pop in a piece of a JavaScript into the website and boom, it does it all for us and it's automatic. I don't know. I still think that you need that human.
Well, humans can definitely do alt tags more descriptive than AI can, but at some point, AI is going to get smarter than we are. You know, like right now,
and
AI is
our robot overlords.
Absolutely. Right now, everything AI can do is input and controlled by us, right? But it's getting smarter all the time.
Yeah, but no, I disagree. I don't think that AI is ever going to get to a point where, at least not in our lifetime.
Yeah, look how well that worked out for Captain Marvel, right?
That's right. No, but seriously, it's just not, because a lot of, like, an effective alt tag for a picture, for example, if we're talking about, you know, like Facebook's efforts to try to have this automatic alt tag. I mean, you can have a picture of a sunset and the AI can go in and recognize, okay, this is a sunset. And it'll say, okay, picture of a sunset. Well, that doesn't give you any sort of context as to what the picture is trying to emote or what makes that sunset particularly important to the context of why it's there.
Yeah, and it mm-hmm. might have missed key elements like the low contrast couple walking along the beach with their dog running in front of it because the contrast wasn't high enough for the AI right. to sort those elements out.
Right, exactly.
Image. It doesn't show the dolphin that's leaping in the yep. in the background spectacularly, and it also doesn't show the Sea Shepherd boat that's chasing around after it to make sure the Japanese whalers don't get it. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The context is important.
Yeah, it's going to pick up major elements. It's not going to pick up subtle.
Right, right. So,
so is that having something better than not having anything at all?
I think it's almost just as useless.
Think so?
Sort of. I mean, the whole point of graphics and having pictures within the body of a website is to portray some sort of particular context or emotion, or it's there for a reason. And if, like, I would think that I would rather just not see it at all if it's just gonna be like picture of a sunset. I mean, who cares
yeah.
if I don't have any context for why that's important.
Yeah. Prime example, Ryan, you've got a picture up on your wall of a whole bunch of faces of rock stars.
Mm-hmm.
Now you threw AI at that picture of faces of rock stars and it comes back and it says a number of faces.
Right.
Is that helpful?
Yes. No, that's not helpful.
Right.
Yeah.
I think we want to go the other way when it comes to alt tagging pictures. You know, maybe these other accessibility issues, you know, maybe that's something that you can throw AI and it can fix. It can fix the, you know, the spacing of your letters, or it can fix, I don't know, whatever, your header structure or whatever automatically. But when it comes to alt tagging pictures, I think that that's something that we just want to encourage people to be doing themselves.
As long as they put quality into it, like you're saying, it's got to be more descriptive than a picture of a sunset, because people can be just as bad as AI.
Sure, sure.
Well, but that's true. Why. I mean, how many websites have we seen that have alt tags on them, but it says picture?
Absolutely, or graphic.
Yeah,
graphic.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely.
Well, exactly. But that's, you know, that's you know, an education thing. That's where we have to, you know, be encouraging people. You know, this is how you alt tag a picture. These are the things to think about. You know, think about the context of it, and think about when you're describing the image, because you're describing it for people who can't see it. So think about that. And I mean, I don't think that that's rocket science, and I don't think that it's you know, it would be a particularly difficult education campaign to really try to push that. But that's where I get a little bit nervous about the AI component of all this, because if we get into this habit where we can just be like, yeah, just throw in this line of JavaScript and it does it all for you, boom, boom, there you go, you're now accessible. Yeah, no, I don't want to encourage that aspect. I want to go the other way and be like, look at your website. Like, really, you know, dissect it and figure out and understand how somebody with, you know, a visual impairment is going to navigate it. Somebody with mobility issues who's just, you know, basically using a switch or a tab key or something to sort of move through your different sections. How are they going to experience your website, and how can you make that a better experience for them? I mean, these are all things that I think that we need to educate businesses on, if they're really serious about making their digital space accessible. We have to treat it just like, you know, the physical spaces. And I mean, those are a problem too. I mean, I think accessibility in general is such a people think that they know everything they need to know about, you know, accessibility and build spaces and digital spaces, and they just don't. It just means so much more than having a wheelchair ramp and a larger door to your bathroom.
Yep.
In terms of physical spaces. And that's where, like, you know, I think about this, you know, push for web accessibility and how, and I compare it to the physical spaces that we still have so far to go. Like, you just think of all the spaces out there in the world that are not accessible. You know, right from, like, I don't know, I walk through the mall, I don't see any Braille signage anywhere. Every time I walk through Lougheed Mall, when I come to the podcast, you know, I sort of be like, man, if I was blind right now, like, how would I, if I wanted to go to London Drugs, how the hell would I get there?
Yeah.
I'd have no way to go. Like, just, I'd, yeah. So, I mean, you know, putting all these expectations on the digital space as well. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like that's not necessarily all that realistic, even though it's an easier fix. You should just call this the rant show. This isn't really a new show.
I'm just waiting for you to wind down, man.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Well, we know there's a lot of work to be done, but I applaud any efforts to make things more accessible.
I do. I wonder, this Ontario, I'm fascinated. Ever since we had David Leposky on talking about the act over there in Ontario, I've kind of been fascinated by, you know, just keeping an eye on it because, you know, it was the first province to really try this legislation, and they just seem to be missing a lot of their goals, and they still really have a long way to go. And, you know, you don't want to poo-poo them too much because at least they tried, they're trying something. But part of the problem with a lot of these types of legislations is that, you know, one party will come in and implement it, and then that party goes out, and the next party comes in, and they're like, well, you know, this isn't really that was sort of their thing. We're not really all that committed to or doing, or they do the minimum, or...
Well, this act has survived successive governments, so, you know, unless somebody strips the paint off it in the near future, there's a year to go before... You know, these requirements for web accessibility are going to be necessary, and I expect that if the legislation stands and you know, we hit that deadline, there's probably going to be lawsuits, and it will probably be lawsuits to the most egregious violators of the accessibility standards.
Right.
It'll probably be ones that are providing services that people need, who've made zero effort to be accessible.
Right.
And those are exactly the guys you want to get nailed to the wall.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, and they're saying, you know, like the smaller companies may face fines of up to $50,000 a day. You know, the governments and stuff could be facing fines of up to $100,000 a day. You know, and that all just kind of leads us into the Accessible Canada Act, right? Like, if we don't learn from the failings of the ODA and change some of the terminology from may to will, we're going to have the same fiasco that Ontario's having right now.
Yeah, the ACA does not cover that's all just federal stuff.
Yeah,
that's
it's all just government.
Federal government who are exempt anyways.
And who they can't exempt themselves.
Yeah,
yes.
They can exempt
themselves.
Yeah. So
like that's the toothless. That's right. Completely toothless. Now whether or not, you know, if there is success in Ontario with this, you know, maybe they might roll some of that language into a, you know, sort of a federal, the federal component of this. But I don't know. Like, I think that there'll be a lot of eyes on this. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of eyes on the ADA and what's going on down in the States right now, to see how they are navigating this new landscape of lawsuits. I mean, I haven't heard of any other big ones since the Domino's one, but I imagine that they're sort of ongoing.
Yeah, the Domino's one's actually still in the courts, you know, from what I read the other day. That
it
actually
is?
Hasn't been finalized yet. Yeah. And I also read one of the articles you sent over, there's over 2,000 other cases in the courts right now.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's some bigger companies that are, you know.
Yeah, I think the main reason why the Domino's one got so well covered in the news is just because it went to the Supreme Court and it was very public, and they were, you know, basically fighting against the ADA, which, you know, was a dick move to start with.
Yeah.
And a company that size should have zero issue with making their stuff accessible. They just decided they wanted to pay lawyers instead of web accessibility consultants.
Well, and it's not like, you know, it's not like they're the federal government that has, you know, millions of websites. Domino's has what, a menu, a navigation bar, You know, like, it wouldn't have been, I don't think, that difficult to make their website or app accessible.
Absolutely not.
You know, like, what a waste of time and money.
Exactly. Yeah, for the amount they spend on lawyers, they could have made their website the best damn pizza website.
Absolutely.
On the planet.
I'm going to shop there.
And there's a business case for that, too. I mean, you know, the more accessible your app or your website is, for easier for people to order, anybody order, that's going to be more business for you. It doesn't even make sense from a business case.
Mm-hmm. Hashtag Domino's.
Hey, you know what else I want to talk about?
No. What else do you want to talk about?
Did you hear about this new wireless retinal device? There's a company called UPMC that's implanted...
Oh, this is the one in California?
Yeah, they've implanted a retinal device as part of a clinical trial that's aimed at restoring partial sight to patients with things like macular degeneration and RP. I guess anything to do with the retina. And I guess the way it works is that it's a small chip that they insert in the retina that then will communicate with, say, something like a pair of smart glasses that will help, I guess, augment an image. You know, I see stuff like this and I think that it's really cool, but then I also, my mind immediately just goes to, yeah, but how practical is this?
It depends on your level of vision. You know, if it gives you a little bit, you know, they did say it takes some reprogramming and training to, you know, have your brain recognize symbols or images. You know, you're still not going to have 20/20 vision, but...
Oh, nowhere close.
No.
Nowhere close. No. See, this is another one of the baby steps that we're going to need to take towards having a functional... visual implantable device of some kind. So basically what they're doing here is they're putting this little device on the retina, I guess. Where is it? 378 tiny electrodes that convert infrared light from the glasses to electrical signals that are carried by the optic nerve to the brain.
Right.
So they have to go through a rehab program. They have to learn to interpret the signals, and compared to earlier generation implants, it's wireless and it has more electrodes, which means you get more visual information. But you still have to go through this training program to interpret what you're seeing, and people are, most patients are able to identify sequences of letters with this device. So it's not restoring sight.
Nope.
Right. It's restoring functionality of some form, which you're going to interpret in a way using your visual processing center, but it's not sight.
Right.
Right.
So I've been really dubious about these technologies because they've been around for a while. And the earliest ones, you know, you had three or four points of light that you could see, and all you could really see was light or dark.
Right.
You know, that's pretty much it. They're getting better and better. You know, now we're to a point where people are able to identify letters with them. And I'd almost put money on it that they're going to be letters that are going to be in pristine, perfect line that they can present to them and have them, you know, scan across in a very structured fashion.
Like an eye chart at an optometrist.
Yeah, that would be my guess. Yeah. I doubt that, you know, you're going to be picking up your Louis L'Amour paperback and reading about the Sackett family anytime soon. But it's baby steps, right? Mm-hmm. Every single one of these is a baby step towards that goal, which ultimately is the artificial eye.
Right. Yeah.
That is as good as what we've got, you know, with standard vision. That's the dream.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that it's interesting to think that, you know, implants is sort of maybe the next step after wearables, right? You know, right now we're sort of immersed in this wearable revolution. So to take that and to sort of go, okay, well, maybe implants is sort of the next stage of that. But I mean, we're still so far away from this being, even if the trials are successful. And they go, okay, you know what? This is something that we're going to actually now offer. I would argue against any sort of business case for it, because for one, it's the cost is going to be astronomical.
Oh, sure.
Because you're going to have to go through the surgery. You're going to have to get the chip implanted. And then on top of that, you're also, there's a wearable component because you have to use it. You're using it along with a pair of smart glasses and stuff. Yeah. So, you know, for the average person, I mean, this is just not going to be a solution anytime soon. But I mean, it is interesting whenever something like this comes up, because it does make you go, okay, well, this is good. I mean, we want to be working on this type of a solution.
Yep.
As opposed to, because, you know, this is a type of solution that's trying to fix the actual problem, as opposed to, you know, normally AT is just here. This is technology that will help you work with whatever the impairment is to sort of work around the impairment. This is actually trying to go in and fix the problem.
Yeah.
So
bravo on them, you know, and bravo for the people who are actually, you know, signing up to do this, because, you know, they're taking risks.
Yeah.
You know, there's always, when you're doing an implant like that, there's risks of infection. There's, you know, it could have dire consequences for them, but they're signing up because, you know, they see a future in this, and, you know, more power to them. But I would never sign up for something like this. I mean, if I lost my sight tomorrow, I would throw myself behind learning Braille, and you know, somebody came to me and said, hey, I might be able to give you 137 points of light. It's like, yeah, come back to me when you've got 4K or something, you know?
Well, it would have to be usable and functional. Yeah. You know, if you're just going to give me little starlights that I see, you know, no thank you. But
okay, let's talk about haptics for a sec. Now, we talked about, you know, I thought this was an interesting article, too, with CES just recently, having finished up a few weeks ago, and we were talking at the time, I think we were talking a little bit about haptics and some of the different options that are out there. And interestingly enough, I was reading an article last week that was talking about our friends over at
Hap2U,
who we talked to a few years back. They presented at CES, and they pulled out a smartphone that they were demoing called Hap2Phone. Has haptics built right into the touchscreen. You know, we talked a little bit about last time about how we kind of thought that is sort of a space where haptics might actually find some traction. You know, using haptics as you know, with mobility aids is as we all know, is a little bit of you know, a mixed bag. And I really feel like these guys are onto something. I do feel like there's some potential for integrating haptics into touchscreens. I think that there's a lot of mainstream applications for it. But I also obviously think that there's a lot of AT potential for that as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, there definitely is. There was some talk years ago about haptics being built into iPhones at some point. I mean, yeah, I mean, the idea of being able to feel buttons on your screen, both, you know, for a visual and a non-visual person, that would be useful, right?
And I think that's the big reason why I think these guys are onto something is because of that, the mainstream applications. We know for a fact that the biggest leaps in accessibility always come as a result of being on the back of something mainstream.
Yep.
Because once it becomes mainstream, it becomes standardized, and then, you know, and then we're laughing. Like, we can just, you know, build accessibility on top of that. So I think that these guys, and you know, I watched the demo that they did at CES, and it was all very mainstream. There was no real AT component to their presentation. You know, they were talking about, hey, this would be really cool because you could be in your car, and, you know, you could be, say, turning up the volume of the stereo, you know, just using a touchscreen, and, you know, you'd feel that click, 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 click as you sort of were turning up the volume slider.
Yeah.
And they did the same thing. They demoed a stove that just had like a touch screen, and how you'd be able to sort of control the temperature on the stove using a like sort of a virtual dial, but you'd be able to feel the dial sort of clicking at the different temperatures. They had an example they had a picture of a fish, and they're like, this would be cool because you can run your finger along the scales of the fish and actually feel what the scales would feel like. They're really pushing this mainstream component of the usability. And I think that that's smart, because if we can push that haptic technology into the mainstream manufacturers of touchscreens, if Apple, say, were to come out, you know, next iPhone, we have a haptic touchscreen. I mean, I really feel like that's a real possibility that we're going to see in the next couple of years. That could be a leap forward with this touchscreen technology that we haven't seen really leap forward in quite a while. And that would be, I think, the first phone manufacturer that jumps on that and offers that up is going to be ahead of the pack. So I don't know. The way that I'm looking at this, guys, is that I think that it's just a matter of who's going to jump on it first. And it's probably going to be Apple. I'd be shocked if Apple isn't already working on this somewhere.
Yeah, could be.
Because I really do. I think that it'll hit mainstream first. And honestly, in that case, Apple's the one I'm actually rooting for, because we know for a fact that if Apple jumps on this haptic touchscreen, they're going to build in some pretty great accessibility components with it. At least that's been their track record. And that's, you know, that's kind of exciting, because you think about all the different applications of this. The other thing that I thought was interesting, though, if you read the article, is that they're using the same technology as electronic braille devices. So it's the piezoelectric, is that?
Yeah.
Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yep.
Yeah.
Close enough.
That technology is what's driving this particular haptic touchscreen anyways.
It'll be cool to see where it goes.
But, and there's always a but, especially with me, what I'm wondering is what is that going to do to the price point?
Good question.
I mean, we know for a fact that particular technology is not cheap.
Yeah, I don't think that they're using that technology exactly the same way as we use it.
Quite possibly not. So
I think it's a different animal, but we'll see. You know, we'll see.
Well, we've talked about haptics for the longest time. We're still waiting for that, you know, that right device, right? Who comes up with the magic sauce?
Yeah.
You know, the wearables, like Rob said, are a mixed bag. Comes up with a tablet that students can use in a geography class, or you know, you can maybe take down to the aquarium or even in your house and load files onto it and look at pictures of dolphins and feel, you know, the shapes and size, you know, that would be great. But I don't think we're there yet.
Yep. We'll get up there.
We will. Yeah. But yeah, if the mainstream does it, hopefully, that'll help drive prices down quickly too.
Yeah, I know. I really think that this is where haptics is going. I think that's going to be the next breakthrough that we see is haptic touchscreens. I mean, you think about touchscreen technology and it's kind of just plateaued for years. I think we're ready. I think we're ready for the next leap. And I think that haptics is where it's going to be.
I want a 3D hologram that I can touch and feel.
A 3D hologram?
Yeah. From my phone. I can just project an image into the middle of the room.
We're ways away from that too. You'll get a robot before you get that.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, hey Ryan.
Hey Rob.
Where can people find us?
As usual, they can find us online at atbanter.com.
Yes, they can also drop us an email if they so desire at cowbell@atbanter.com.
And not only that, they can get us on all of those sexy social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn.
And I have to go on Instagram once I get my computer back from Mr. Rick and see how Rob's alt tags are going.
Oh, shut up,
Ryan. Hey, you ranted about alt tags.
I'm getting a little worried about my meds. Well, because dementia is definitely one of the side effects that they say in older people that really? It could... I'm taking vitamin B supplements because of it, but I don't know. I tried to wean myself right off my meds, but on these stupid this acid reflux medication that I'm on. And I've got it down. I used to take two a day. Now I only take one. And I tried to get it myself right off it, but like I would have to like eat a bottle of Tums every day.
Well, if you cut back on the ravioli, that's acidic tomato sauce.
It doesn't matter, dude. I can eat vegetables. I'm telling you. I mean, but that is true.
Dairy. Cut out.
All right. Anyways. Okay. I don't want to go too long. Steve's trying to get out of here, so I'm not going to go on about my medical issues. Or my dementia, my forthcoming dementia. Right. That
express your concerns to Rob at cowbell@atbanter.com.
good on the stick. All right. Well, that is going to about do it for us this week. Thanks everybody for listening in to listen to our rant. Ryan, we got anything fun happening next week that you want to plug?
Couldn't tell you. I don't know.
See, Ryan is suffering from dementia as well. We don't know what's going on. We don't know where we are.
It's in my calendar.
All right, everybody, thanks so much for listening. We will see everybody
next week.
This podcast has been brought to you by Canadian Assistive Technology, providing low vision and blindness solutions across Canada. Find us online at www.canastech.com. That's CANASSTECH.com. Or call us toll free at 1-844-795-8324. For all your assistive technology servicing needs, call Chaos Technical Services at 778-847-6840 or find them online at chaostechnicalservices.com.
Whoa, look at that. Master of the one take.